So as the calendar year begins and is underway, the Christian church around the world observes what we call Epiphany. And Epiphany, that word which means appearance or manifestation, is this short period, actually, between Christmas and before Lent, the preparation period before Easter, where the Christian tradition highlights stories of the appearance or manifestation of Christ to the world. It begins with that famous story of the Magi who follow the star. And last week we heard another famous Epiphany story, the baptism of Jesus by John the Baptizer. And Epiphanies, these and all of the other stories that are named Epiphanies, are supposed to be aha moments. Somehow, the core character of who Jesus was and what his ministry was about was revealed. And as aha moments of divine revelation, Epiphany is actually quite closely related to another theological concept, a spiritual concept that you may or may not have heard of before. It's called theophany. Theophany. And it's from a compound Greek word which quite simply means the appearance of a god, theophany. And it is a perceptible manifestation of somehow an ineffable, invisible, spiritual God in the physical world. So it seems to me in those terms that it is accurate to say that the long-standing Christian claim that God was incarnate in Jesus Christ is to claim theophany, that somehow the eternal God was manifest in a decisive, even a sustained way in the human being of Jesus. God was made seeable, hearable, touchable. So for these remaining few weeks of Epiphany, there are actually 4 weeks remaining, I'm going to alternate between a couple of the remaining traditional Epiphany stories and some theophany stories so we can appreciate those rich connections. And today's story is probably familiar to many of us, if not most of us, the story that we hear from the book of Exodus. One of the most famous theophany stories in the Bible, the encounter that Moses has with God, the burning bush, so famous, in fact, that we have a stained glass window of the burning bush, which, if you haven't noticed, is the cover of your bulletin this Sunday. Ta-da, ta-da. Who noticed that? Oh, look at you. Look at you. Treasures in heaven. Treasures in heaven. There you go. If you happen to be unfamiliar with the story of Moses or have forgotten some parts of it, let's see if I can try to recap in about 3 minutes, 18 chapters of Exodus. The ancient Israelites, who were desert nomads, ended up in Egypt because Joseph, who was the great-grandson of Abraham, who was the son of Jacob, Joseph, the son of Jacob, was called Israel. Joseph had become steward over Egypt, and during a famine, his father Jacob and all of the brothers and families of Joseph moved to Egypt. And over the course of generations in Egypt, they grew so numerous and so prosperous that a new pharaoh arose, we are told, and their prosperity and numbers made him nervous. So they were enslaved and put to hard labor, a slavery that lasted more than 400 years. Yet they continued to multiply, so the Pharaoh ordered that the midwives of the Hebrews, as they were called, the midwives were to kill all of the male infants as they were born. But subversive Hebrew midwives saved some of them. And one who was saved in particular, we have come to call Moses, and he was raised by Pharaoh's daughter. He was saved through a plot with his older sister, who is unnamed, but we can assume that it was Miriam. He was saved and raised by Pharaoh's daughter, a princess. He was raised as a privileged Egyptian, but when he grew up, he somehow learned that he was also Hebrew, and he ended up killing an Egyptian, and he fled Egypt. Now, We have no idea how long this adult Moses was in the desert of Midian, tending the flocks of his father-in-law Jethro, but it was some number of years because by the time this story happens, he has a wife and children. And it's before this famous scene today, the text tells us God had heard and responded to the groaning of the Hebrews under their oppression. And in this famous scene, Moses, while shepherding the flocks of his father-in-law, notices a peculiar thing, something that is surely peculiar, that there was a bush, shrubbery, was on fire, but oddly enough, it wasn't being burned. And we hear Moses think aloud, "Let me turn aside and see this great sight." He approaches and he hears a divine voice. It says the voice of an angel. We later learn that it's the voice of God. "Moses, here I am. Remove your shoes, for you are standing on holy ground." Now, the encounter continues beyond the excerpt that we hear today. From this bush that was burning but not consumed, God has called and commissions Moses to go and set the Hebrews free from Egypt. He's called to be the great liberator of his peoples. The story goes on, "Go down to Egypt and tell Pharaoh, let my people go." In a later part of the story, you may remember, when Moses asks, "Well, who am I supposed to say is sending me?" For the first time in Scripture, God reveals God's own name, a name that was so holy, it was considered unpronounceable in Hebrew. Profound and ambiguous, that name is usually rendered Yahweh, "I am who I am," or "I will be who I will be." So Moses, along with his brother Aaron, go down to Egypt, and through all kinds of wonders and miracles and plagues and confrontations with Pharaoh, the Hebrews are delivered. So this turns out, these few verses, this theophany of God's presence in a bush that burns but not consumed, is one of the most pivotal scenes in all the Bible. It sets in motion the greatest theme, probably the greatest theme of Scripture, which is deliverance from oppression. Deliverance from oppression to freedom. That probably took more than 3 minutes. So I'm curious. Stick with me. We'll get there. Any sci-fi geeks in the house? Any sci-fi? Yes. Oh, well, not as many as I'd hoped, but that's all right. That's all right. So whether or not you're a sci-fi geek, you will probably know one of the most explored themes in science fiction and fantasy is time travel. You know, time travel. Ooh, there was a woo. There you go. Someone give me the name of the H.G. Wells classic. Yes, good job. Time Machine. Rendered in movie, a novel, but rendered in movie form. But also, over and again, there's the Back to the Future movie franchise. There's also the Terminator movie franchise. There's an upcoming movie, if you've seen the trailers for, The Almanac. All of them explore this issue of traveling in time. And the question, can you or can you not change the present by redoing or undoing something of the past? Now, geeks will endlessly argue about how the timeline will be altered if you change anything, or if some other independent timeline then begins to be created. But I think the fundamental issue is really quite understandable. And it's this: our simplest choices have unforeseen outcomes. Our simplest choices have unforeseen outcomes. It is like that pebble that is cast into a pond. The impact of a choice has ripples beyond the immediate moment. So what strikes me always about this story of Moses and the burning bush, one of the most pivotal moments in all of Scripture, it turns out, it's a simple choice that precipitates this encounter. Moses decides to turn aside and take a look. That doesn't sound particularly amazing or dramatic. The decision to turn aside and look reminds me again that the fundamental spiritual practice of all is to pay attention. Moses decided to turn aside and take a look. I wonder what would have happened had Moses not turned aside. What would have happened had Moses not turned aside? What if he had just noticed, yes, maybe made a mental note, oh, I'll come back and check on that a little bit later, but he kept on going. He was too busy with his job, and frankly, a more responsible shepherd would have stayed closer to the flock. Had Moses not turned aside, there would have been no command to take off one's shoes because the ground is holy. Had Moses not turned aside, there would have been no revelation of God's name, I am who I am. Had Moses not turned aside, no call to let his enslaved peoples go. No deliverance of the Hebrews from Egypt, which would have meant there is no central story for Jewish identity. No deliverance from Egypt, no covenant at Mount Sinai, no entrance into the Promised Land, perhaps no Jewish nation, perhaps no great King David, no Hebrew scripture, no prophets, no Messiah. The ancient Hebrews likely would have vanished as a footnote in ancient history, a people maybe chosen but now extinct. Had Moses not turned aside to see such a small thing? Had Moses remained on his path, not turned aside, our world would be unrecognizable. I wonder, how long had that bush blazed before anyone took notice to turn aside and see? Is it blazing still and no one takes notice? Will we turn aside, or are we too busy and comfortable to turn aside and see? I don't know about you, but I live a pretty predictable life. Perhaps you do as well. We make the same choices over and over again, either because of efficiency, you know, the way we walk or drive to or from work or to and from church. It's the same way because it works, so it's efficient. It may be familiarity. I know I eat at the same handful of places all the time because I know what to expect and I love it. Or maybe it's comfort and personal preference, like your order at Starbucks, tall Americano, light room. What happens when we make a deviation, take a different way, turn aside from our typical path? Sometimes simple things, sometimes dramatic things happen. You know, even if you make an incremental change on the trajectory of your path, a small shift makes all the difference, even if it's that much. You keep going that way, you end up so far in a completely different destination. Isn't that how the call of God works? God calls, God beckons with a holy presence, and if we but turn aside and take notice, we will end up somewhere completely different and unexpected. I really never expected to end up preaching in a pulpit. It seems on this Martin Luther King weekend, I can't help but wonder if we as a people, as a nation, as individuals, are called to turn aside and make just a small shift on the trajectory of our path. One of the things I've been doing, particularly in the last few months, as I continue to process all of the calls for racial justice, having conversations and reading a few things, and Nikki shared a wonderful excerpt, an article of a book. So many good things, but one of the things that really leaped out in that essay to me was how it is that we need to let go of certain myths that we have about how we can make a difference. We need to let go of the myth that because I can't do everything, the one small thing I do doesn't matter at all. We need to let go of the myth that because I may not live to see the change I want to see, the change that I make myself makes no difference at all. We need to let go of the myth that one small change in trajectory will not someday, not necessarily in my timing, but in God's timing, put us at a completely different destination. That's just one example of how I think God continues to beckon us to turn aside and make a shift in our path. We need to let go of the myth that even the smallest turn will not make a huge difference. It will. Is the bush still blazing and we simply keep walking right on by? I love, love, love the quote by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. She affirms it so beautifully. No pebble at your foot but a sphere, and those memorable words, earth is crammed with heaven and every bush afire with God. Earth is crammed with heaven and every bush afire with God. But most just sit around and pluck blackberries. Are we going to turn aside and take off our shoes or not? Are our patterns so familiar, our focus so singular, our patterns so comfortable that we fail to see God blazing, flickering, beckoning us to turn aside? There is another quote that I have used before that I will use again. And not just now. I'm sure I'll use it again and again. The only difference between a rut and a grave is the depth. The only difference between a rut and a grave is the depth. Let that sink in. In the name of fulfilling expectations, doing our duty, it's comfortable, it's familiar, it's just the way we've always done it. In other words, Elizabeth Barrett Browning would say, plucking blackberries. Are you or me, all of us, remaining in our familiar, well-worn, customary ruts, just digging a more comfortable grave, when all the while God is calling us to something new and different? Will we turn aside and look? The call is God's, the choice is ours, to turn aside and notice God beckoning. To turn aside, and we and our world will end up somewhere completely and blessedly different.